Government is not our master, it is our servant. Its only power, that which we the people allow it to have.
Liberty Watch is an independent program on KVOI dedicated to the notion that government remains servant, not master, and operating in the public interest for which the media in this country was designed by exploring controversy. This helps us to resolve our differences peaceably, refining controversy into clarity through investigation, research, interview of experts, and public feedback. Liberty Watch is based in objective reason and is biased towards individual liberty, and so is not the view of the station or anyone but the host, guests, and callers. Liberty Watch operates outside the realm of political correctness, taking no notice at all of race, creed, religion, ethnicity, political affiliation, or orientation, focusing on content of character in eternal vigilance to the free flow of information about government, technology, current events, and our steadfast Constitution. The program is paid, produced, hosted, and operated by Charles Heller, and any mistakes are solely his responsibility.
Our responsibility, how the topic keeps coming up. Today we have the joy and pleasure and honor of having Philip Williams, and he is the head of BBSI here in Tucson. They're a company that's traded on the stock exchange. They do business services such as workman's comp and OSHA compliance and a number of other things that we someday will discuss. I want to do a whole program on it. But in any case, we're here to discuss Federalist number 40, and welcome back.
It's good to be back. Feels like it's been a long time.
It feels like it has. There's been some water under the bridge by stuff. I want to digress for just a moment. Do you think that the stuff with Epstein is a distraction from the business of the country, or is it the business of the country?
Yes and yes. It is. I think it is the business of the country because it seems to involve so many people who are either very wealthy or politically connected. And I don't think that the people of the country want to believe or know that political officials are acting in nefarious ways. Mm-hmm. I think that people want to know that their elected officials and the people who run the large companies are all behaving morally and ethically and not getting caught on a kiss cam. and so in that way, it's a little bit of a related topic.
It is. When you're having an affair with your HR director.
Yeah. So, we want to have the confidence that the people that are leading the country are behaving ethically in really all facets and phases of their life. And so there's that, and that's, it does not depend on what the definition of is. So in that regard, yeah, it is the business of the country. Separately, it is also distracting because...
salacious nature.
It doesn't do anything to make my tomorrow better. Mm-hmm. Knowing the list isn't going to make my tomorrow better materially as an individual. But again, I think we all want to know that our leaders are ethical people. And that's important to the fabric of who we are. And quite frankly, it's important to the fabric or all of the issues that we see across the country today.
Do we want to know that our leaders are ethical, or do we just want transparency if they're not ethical? In other words, do we expect them to be angels, or is it that we just want their true nature to be revealed one way or the other?
Well, let's just they crucified the last guy that was perfect, right?
Yeah.
However, I think that it is acceptable for the people to require that their elected officials are ethical. Now, am I naive to think that only the people that I voted for are ethical? No. And I don't I would like to think that none of us believe that actually. However, there are certain transgressions which are unforgivable.
Yeah.
And I think that is where a lot of folks who are really upset, whether you're Dan Bongino or your next door neighbor, a lot of folks that are really, really upset are super upset because transgressions against children.
Yeah.
Or those who can't defend themselves are simply just not abided.
Nope. On to Federalist number 40. What is the purpose, in your view, of what was Hamilton aiming at in Federalist 40? What point was overarching point was he making?
I think he was trying to prove you could have a sentence with eight commas in it. I couldn't resist. He's so hard to read. You know, if it doesn't have six commas, it couldn't be a sentence.
Our most circuitous founder.
I thought this was a bit of, like we were chatting before the show, I thought this was a breath of fresh air to talk about something that a lot of us don't reflect on. And the fundamental question of 40 is, did the Continental Congress, under the Articles of Federation, have the authority to propose a new constitution? And to me, it came down to two simple points that he made in 40, in all of the pages. This is a little bit of a longer one, actually, but when he quotes the Declaration of Independence,
mm-hmm.
And says that, the precious right of the people to abolish or alter their government as to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness. That's a direct quote from the Declaration of Independence. And mm-hmm. basically what that means is that you and I have a right to vote and change our form of government.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the ultimate authority, is essentially the Declaration of Independence, right? It's the first document. And then from there, he later points out that the new Constitution wasn't just ratified by delegates.
No, it's by the people of the states.
Yeah, it was popularly voted upon by the people of the states. So it's not as if the people were excluded. The framers of the Constitution, simply after laboring under a flawed set of articles for probably 7 or 8 years, said, hey, we've got to fix this. This isn't working. Let's propose a new document and let the people vote on it.
1783 to 87, 4 years.
Well, the articles were actually,
when were they? When were the? You know, that's a trivia question. I don't know the answer to.
Well, I went down that rabbit hole for you.
Oh, good.
Yeah. So, the articles were proposed and generally adopted on November 15th, 1777.
Oh, 77. So 10 yeah. years. Yeah, because the Constitution yep. was ratified in 87.
Right.
So yeah, 10 years.
There's a few steps in here. First, they were generally accepted in 1777. However, not fully ratified until Maryland, who was the last state to ratify the articles, March 1st of 1781.
Mm-hmm.
However, by the spring of 1787, it was clear that the articles were completely insufficient.
Right.
And that's what began the conference? Was it the conference or the committee at Annapolis?
The one in May of 87.
And then, then they met in May in 1787. They met in
Philadelphia.
Philadelphia. What was the hall? Jesus.
Hall? Constitution Hall is what they call it now.
Yeah, So, and it's really wild to stand in that room. And when the first time I stood in that room, I didn't really, really get the gravity of it.
Oh.
Yeah.
And at the time, in 1967, the Liberty Bell had not been taken from that building and put in its own building. It was on the third floor of that building, and it was in a passageway just sitting there.
Yep.
And you could walk by and touch it, and I have.
And that's, when I saw it, it was there. It was in the courtyard, but, it's down at ground level now.
Right. It's surrounded by a velvet rope, and it's in its own
yep.
building.
Yeah. So generally accepted in 77, ratified in 81. And then just a number of flaws, really, by, they said by the mid 1780s, so by 1785, it was clear that the Articles of Confederation were not going to be adequate to continue governing the country.
Mm-hmm. They said, quote, "Resolved that in the opinion of Congress, it is expedient that on the 2nd of May, Monday, on the second Monday in May next, a convention of delegates who shall have been appointed to the several, by the several states, be held at Philadelphia, and for the sole and express purpose of revising the Articles of Confederation and reporting to Congress and the several legislatures such alterations and provisions therein as shall, when agreed to in Congress and confirmed by the states, render the federal constitution adequate to the exigencies of government and the preservation of the Union." So it wasn't a runaway convention, was it?
Not even close. And they did it pretty thoughtfully, I feel. You know, they started out, they actually closed the shutters, locked the doors, swore secrecy to each other and said, "Hey, look, we got to build a better constitution for the country." And that began a three-month debate process over all of the various articles. And I actually looked this up, too, because I was like, well, hey, did the Articles of Confederation have anything like the Article 5 in the current Constitution? And the answer is no.
A way to amend it.
Yeah, there was no way to amend it, and there was really no way to have the people turn it over.
Right, but there is this overarching right to alter or abolish a form of government and institute new governments as shall, you know, best affect our peace and happiness, to paraphrase the Declaration.
Right.
There was a human right that exceeded the written rights that were in the Declaration. But on this program, we do have a right to have advertising. Otherwise, we won't have a program. So stand by in the Wilkinson Wealth Management Studios. Folks, I encourage you to call in and kick the can a little bit back after these messages.
Hi, it's Mark Levin. Liberty Watch on KVOI is dedicated to the notion that government remains servant, not master. Sounds like Charles has been reading my books. Congratulations on KVOI, Charles.
Rise up. I will fight for this land, but there's only one man who can give us a command so we can rise up. Understand, it's the only way to rise up. Rise up.
Here he comes.
Here comes the general.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Here comes the general.
The moment you've been waiting for.
Here comes the general.
The pride of Mount Vernon.
Here comes the general.
George Washington. We gotta make him all out stand.
Well, we have the Pride of the Naval Reactors program here. E6 Philip Williams. And we're talking about Federalist number 40.
Maine Motor Mechanic.
Maine Motor Mechanic. Motor Mac.
I got my fish pinned on by a Maine Motor Mechanic from the SS 212.
Oh, really? From the drum?
No. The SS 212 was the World War II namesake of the ship that I was on, Gato.
Oh, it was the Gato. Gato class, right, yeah. The Gato class. The Silversides that I worked on as a paint chipper was a Gato class.
Yeah.
The 236 boat.
The 7th War Patrol for Gato, I think one day would make just an incredible movie.
We might make a good America Armed and Free if you want to. I can research it and you and I can talk about it.
We should, because that was... those guys are amazing that they even made it back to port.
So,
but that's not
was that the,
topic. The
death charge attack?
That's the one where the Japanese had gotten hold of new intelligence and they had found out
the depth.
Yep, they found out that we weren't 200-foot ships. We were 400 feet down.
Yeah.
And they tracked Gato and depth charged her for over 24 hours straight.
Yep.
And she limped in with so many holes leaking that it wasn't even funny.
Yeah. Next time we do a Federalist, maybe we'll do the second hour on that. So that'd be one of my fantasy programs to do that, drive the audience off in droves. Maybe not. All right, back to the Federalist number 40. They said, quote, and by the way, if you got something better, feel free to interrupt. Is there something you want to make sure we get to and you want to do it first?
You know, let's just keep free flowing. I got some fun stuff in here.
They said, quote, "From a comparison and a fair construction of these several modes of expression, it is to be deduced the authority under which the convention acted, they were to frame a national government adequate to the exigencies of government and of the Union, and to reduce the Articles of Confederation into such form as to accomplish these purposes, unquote. Is it your opinion that the Constitution fulfilled that exact role?
Absolutely. Yeah. It's pretty easy for me. I think they put a lot of debate and thought into it. And you have to reflect back to a lot of this caused me to kind of jump back to, wait a minute. We all think we know how the Constitution came to be, right? Or many of us think we know. But how did the Articles come to be?
That's a great question.
And so I kind of went down that rabbit hole, and I was looking, and you know, they basically threw the Articles together really darn fast, because we'd just gotten independence from Great Britain, and they had to have something that they thought could unite the country. And so one of the questions that I looked at was, hey, when we crafted the Articles of Confederation, did they actually believe that that was a document that was sufficient enough to govern the country under? And the answer is no.
Hmm.
And then you have to realize that the Articles were drafted at a time and a moment when the founders had a real jaded view of a lot of central authority. And so that actually turned out to be one of the flaws of the Articles, is that they just didn't have enough central authority.
Right. They couldn't have an effective government.
And the states were still functioning, you know, during the period of the Articles, they were still functioning as, I'll call them, united sovereigns,
mm-hmm.
where governors really controlled, and you had multiple forms of currency and counterfeiting and all kinds of problems going on. But again, they thankfully, one sentence in the Declaration of Independence, they can always reflect back to that and say, you know what, it was our job under the Declaration of Independence to recognize that the Articles were flawed,
mm-hmm.
and they weren't contributing to the happiness of the people. And so it was our job to propose a new constitution for the country.
John Dickinson was the manager of the group that wrote it, of representatives of one delegate from each colony. Anyway, back to this.
So here's something fun. Are you consciously aware that there were actually, if you look at our history, there's three sets of presidents.
Mm-hmm. Before Washington.
No, just in the life of our country. We have sort of three sets. We have the set that existed before the Articles are ratified. Okay. So that's up through 1781. Okay. So you have independence. Peyton Randolph becomes the president of the Continental Congress. Okay. He is, if you will, sort of the first president. And then in 1781, Maryland ratifies, because the Articles, here's another interesting thing. In order to change the Articles in any way, it required a unanimous vote of all 13 colonies.
Right.
And the original Articles were actually ratified by just 13 people.
Huh.
So you have Peyton Randolph, who serves. He's the first one. And then in 1781, you get the Articles. And there are eight presidents who serve as president, one-year terms, under the Articles of Confederation. And then you have 1789 and George Washington. So those are your three sort of phases, if you will. And it's really interesting in the years that immediately follow the Declaration of Independence, all of those presidents, and I think there was 28 of them. It was a huge number. One guy actually served for only 4 days.
Hmm.
He was president of the Continental Congress for 4 days. You have those 28 or so, and then you have the eight that served. And somebody can correct me if I'm wrong, but I know that the number is really high under the Continental Congress. And then there's the eight under the Articles, and then now we just have our 47 so far that we've had under the U.S. Constitution. But it's mind-boggling. You have to have a lot of respect, I think, for all of the people who served as president from independence through 1789.
Right, when the Constitution was ratified.
The fact that they were able to keep us together long enough to create a document that could endure 200 and something years, 250 years now.
249.
It's only 239 when we do our 250th, right? Because the country will have the country was how many years old in 1789? 13 years?
So well, it'll be 206. If you count it starting in 76, that's 86 and then 87, 11 years old, and 12 years old when we ratified the Constitution.
Yeah, so the Constitution next year will only be 238 years old.
Ah, true.
But amazing. You know, I don't think those guys get enough credit for keeping us glued together long enough to actually get into an intelligent debate about what would our Constitution actually look like. At the moment, we just knew we were mad enough at the king that he had to go.
Right.
And so then they create this loose confederation that has several flaws, one of those being there's actually no way to alter it unless all 13 agree, and that's why the Constitution didn't go into effect until it was fully, well, it only required 9 out of 13 to ratify it.
Right.
And who was the last state?
It was North Carolina? Was it? No, it was in the it was in the Northeast. Last state to ratify. I'm sure you'll I'm sure you'll come up with it faster than I will because I've got my finger on the go button for the next break.
Oh, let's do it. Do the break.
Go ahead and vote. Last state to ratify. Was it New Hampshire? Was it Vermont?
You know, we should really know the answer to this.
We
question,
should, as we? Constitutional geeks, we should both know this. But and I know who does know it is John McElroy knows that he has the dates memorized when everybody, when everyone ratified. So who was the last state to ratify? We're hanging on the edges of our seats here.
Well, my darn phone keeps.
Okay, got it. Hang on, let me see.
And Rhode Island.
Yeah, okay. It was one of them guys.
Yeah.
All right. And on that note, we're going to start the break rolling in the Wilkinson Wealth Management Studios. And you can call in at 520-790-2040, discussing Federalist Number 40. Read it on the break real fast and then discuss it with...
Yeah. He's got you.
Swap Shop trains are coming, rolling down that free market track.
Sunday mornings, you can buy, sell, or trade anything lawful and moral on the Swap Shop. Let's listen.
Do you know what the record length is for the catch of the infamous Pima sand shark?
No, I do not.
I don't either. I just figured you might know.
That's a good trivia question. I think I'll look that up.
You're right. I know that the biggest one was in the Rio, but anyway.
Swap Shop, Sundays 10 to 11 a.m., right before Liberty Watch.
Hi, it's Mark Levin. Liberty Watch on KVOI is dedicated to the notion that government remains servant, not master. Sounds like Charles has been reading my books. Congratulations on KVOI, Charles.
All righty, welcome back. I think I'm having an interesting time with the breaks, but that's okay. And we think I played the same one twice. Not sure. Anyway,
everybody's entitled to a cloudy day.
Yeah, that's okay. Or as Ben Bueller Garcia says, Charles is always, Ben's entitled to one dumb question. So am I. But go on. It was Rhode Island that was last to ratify.
Yep.
You were saying.
I was just commenting that what a marvel it is that we actually made it through that period of time.
Well, I get a kick out of people who are saying, oh, it's never been more contentious, you know, now. Ever heard of the Civil War? Good heavens.
These guys had to lock themselves in a room for 3 days straight just to agree that there was time to, like, come up with a new constitution. Like, things were going bad. The states were arguing amongst each other. The interstate commerce was a problem. You really couldn't raise a military. They were having land disputes. I think there's something about a post office or somewhere in here, too. Isn't it funny that the post office is still a problem 200 and something years later?
Well, it still is, but one of the things I like to do, and I've said it before on the air, is whenever I run into a postal clerk or we get a new mailman on the block, I always ask them, when was the last time you read the Constitution? They always say high school, and I'll say, now my response is, you need to look at, usually I hand them a copy and say, you need to look at Article 1, Section 8, Clause 7. It is the authority of the federal government to build needful buildings and postal roads for the mail to flow. That was in the original Constitution 4 years before the First and Second Amendments were installed. 4 years, say, 80, yeah, 4 years before the First and Second Amendments and the first 10 amendments were installed in the Constitution, the idea of what that postal delivery man or clerk was doing was thought of by the originators of this Constitution. And I think that, to me, I find it, every time I walk into a post office, I think of that.
It was such a paramount.
Well, it was the Internet then.
Yeah. I'm trying to find the, there, there was a specific item mentioned in 40 about the post office, and I'm trying
there
to find
was,
it.
There was, and I have the whole text of 40, but the two of us will be reading rather than broadcasting. If you look for it, I'm going to pose this next thing. Multitask this, read that, and listen to this.
Okay.
Quote, there are two rules of construction dictated by plain reason as well as founded on legal axioms. The one is that every part of the expression ought, if possible, to be allowed some meaning and to be made to conspire to some common end. The other is that where the several parts cannot be made to coincide, the less important should give way to the more important part. The means should be sacrificed to the end rather than the end to the means. Unquote.
Yeah, and I actually I had to read that sentence a few times over to make sure that I understood what he was saying there, because that might be arguably the most important thought in 40.
Well, in other words, the Constitution is not a so-called suicide pact.
Right.
That you want to stick to principle, and you don't want your principle to be so rigid that you end up dying on it because of the principle.
Yeah, they said, look, the end is what's important, and the means, we can figure out a different way to get there.
Right.
But the end is what's important, and what is the end? The end is 13 United States.
Mm-hmm. The end is forming a country with a government that has an effectual system for running it in perpetuity.
Right. And that's why we had so many of the different... I mean, there's a lot of things in the Constitution that are compromises.
Oh, yeah. The three-fifths compromise with population count of slaves.
Well, yeah.
Is a popular one. And people don't understand it. That wasn't racism. That was combating racism.
At the time, it was.
Right.
We had to slowly erode it because we're trying to get rid of it.
You can't get rid of it overnight.
Yeah, I mean, even when it came down to it, it took years and years.
Right, in a war. But the thing was, that was for representation. And the reason for that is so that the slaves could be partially counted as part of the census, so that when they were apportioning representatives, the South would get its representation.
Yeah, because the North was more populated, and it was anti-slavery, and the South thought they were going to get run over.
Right. Well, the North wanted none of the slaves to be counted in the census,
yeah.
And the South wanted all of the slaves. So that was the compromise.
Well, and the North felt like that because if the North could have gotten what they wanted, which was zero fifths, then they could have more quickly
ended slavery.
But they were all also trying to avoid the country coming apart and ultimately civil war, which
happened anyway.
Yeah.
So,
thanks to that not-so-favorite guy from Tennessee.
Buchanan?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He's my least favorite.
I think Wilson is my least favorite, but I digress. It further guarantees that the state sovereignty... If the Constitution guaranteed the idea of state sovereignty under federalism, did it not?
Yes, it did, and that's, again, our least favorite amendment to the Constitution, the 17th.
Right.
You know, senators were supposed to be appointed by the state legislatures.
Right.
And that was how the states kept their sovereignty within our system. And that and having a governor and their own local executive branches. But, that the idea of senators and having an upper house and all being equal, right?
Mm-hmm.
All states are equal in the Senate.
Right, and that was the purpose of that, so that the more populous states didn't overrun the least populous states. That, too, in the Electoral College was that as well.
Right.
You were talking earlier about finding the part about the post office. It was the taxes to operate the post office, was it not?
I think they were talking about how that was like the only thing that was worthwhile in the Articles of... and I'm trying to find it. I remembered reading it, but I... He is. It's at the phase or the part of the document where he's running through the long list of items. He just started rattling off a list.
Yeah, that's that seven sentence. That's that seven line sentence or 12 line sentence.
Run on sentence.
Right. quote, "The truth is that the great principles of the Constitution proposed by the Convention may be considered as less as absolutely new than the expansion of principles which are found in the Articles of Confederation. The misfortune under the latter system has been that these principles are so feeble and confined as to justify all the Congress of inefficiency which has been urged against it and to require a degree of engagement which gives the new system the aspect of an entire transformation of the old," unquote. In other words, the principles were there, but the effectuating means was not.
Yeah, it was not a robust document. When you start looking through it, I think, there's a spot in here where he remarks that the document was so inadequate that he talks about Virginia holding up an amendment to the Articles in the mid-1780s simply because to amend the Articles required all of the states to affirmatively agree. It was a 100% rule.
Right. It was pure democracy of the states as opposed to a Republican form of government. Because that's what democracy is.
Yes.
It's the vote of the people. By the way, there is, in terms of a democracy, there is a percentage of a voting population at which democracy becomes moral. Are you familiar with that percentage? It's 100%.
Yeah, but
democracy becomes moral if 100% of the people in the democracy agree on it.
Mm-hmm.
But if one person disagrees, it becomes tyrannical because it's a tyranny of the majority.
Right.
Which is why we're not a democracy.
And that's why, four out of the first 10 papers talk about faction.
Right. Exactly. I'm trying to find that too about the two rules. Suppose that in the expressions defining the authority of the convention, we irreconcilably at variance with each other. You know.
Are you looking up the two rules?
I'm trying to read through the first sentence of every paragraph of Federalist 40 to try and find the part you're looking for. And I am not being fecund.
I found the remark about the post office.
Oh, go ahead.
It's about halfway through, and again, he's just running through the list of issues. With the articles and talking about how they're having a hard time defending the borders of the country.
Mm-hmm.
They're having a hard time dealing with disputes between the states about where the state line may or may not be and who can grow where and all of these fun things. They're having a problem with coinage, printing money, Confederate. That's why the Secret Service was actually, the Treasury was, mm-hmm. was, you know, you had Department of Treasury, Department of War. Treasury was first because the country was economically coming unglued before the U.S. Constitution existed.
Well, we didn't have a currency.
Well, yeah, we didn't. We had at least 13 kinds of currency.
At least.
And
plus, we still accepted British currency.
Yeah. Yeah, we were still actually running on the GBP.
GBP?
Great British Pound.
Oh, all right.
You have to remember your days from watching the stock market in, like, 1989 to remember that.
I never really watched the stock market, I gotta tell you. I was never that guy.
Oh. I find it a fascinating way to look at human behavior.
That's why you work so well in business services. You relate money to human behavior very well. You're very good at that.
Let's see here. In cases of capture, of piracy, of the post office, of coins, weights, measures, of trade with Indians, of claims under the grants of land, which that was actually one of the significant debates that they had, and I think it was in 1786 that they had that. It was probably one of the biggest pieces of quote-unquote legislation that really moved us toward, I think it was Hansen who was the first president under the Articles and moved us toward adopting the Articles.
Mm-hmm. Standardization of the currency.
Yep. The ability to raise an army and a navy. All of these things were issues. So the only reference that I could find to post office was that they didn't have the ability to make one function under the Articles.
Mm-hmm.
Do these fundamental principles require particularly that no tax should be levied without the intermediate agency of the states? Let me reread that. Do these fundamental principles, so the ability to raise an army, the ability to operate a military, the ability to run a post office, the ability to trade with either Native Americans or foreign countries, do these fundamental principles require particularly that no tax should be levied without the intermediate agency of the states?
In other words, that there's no effective way to have a to raise the capital to levy taxes, for instance, on imports. Exactly what we're doing now, and where people are worried about inflation, we're bringing in more money than we were before. We're actually at a positive cash flow in the United States at this moment because of the amount of money we're bringing in due to tariffs.
Yeah, and we're down to, I think, 2.7%.
Right, inflation. I don't think that's an accurate number. I think it's less. I think it's closer to 2.1% inflation because they're not looking at the long-term picture of it. I don't think it's adjusted for all the inputs.
Well, I haven't had a chance to have a coffee chat with Powell lately. So.
Yeah, he's eight months from not being in the picture, I think, or maybe 7 months from not being in the picture.
I think some folks are hoping he's 8 days from being out of the picture.
Well, you know, you don't want things changed for, as it says in the Declaration, light and transient causes, although that's neither a light nor a transient cause. But you don't want violent upheavals in government. You want a government that has a, you know, it's kind of like, you know, the moves sort of like the Sufi laxative, you know, all things must pass.
Yeah.
So you want a government that has a smoother flow to it than one that's constant upheaval, in constant upheaval. That's why a Republican form of government is so much more stable than a parliamentary form.
You can interestingly point to our own history as a country when you look at, here we are 47 presidents in, but there's only been, 235 years, 238 years past.
Mm-hmm.
And yet in the 12 years between the revolution and the Constitution being ratified, you had as many people serve as president in those 12 years.
Mm-hmm.
So that gives you an idea of what an improvement the Constitution was over the Articles.
We went from steam power to internal combustion.
Yeah.
You know, at that point. Yeah. All right, stand by in the Wilkinson Wealth Management Studios. And our last break of the hour, your last chance to call in. Gary, if you have a thought, hop to it. 520-790-2040.
Swap Shop trains are coming, rolling down.
Sunday morning, 10 to 11 a.m. on KVOI. You can buy and sell and trade anything you want that's lawful and moral to own. Let's listen.
Rick, you're on the Swap Shop.
Hovercraft is like on Star Wars, but it's missing engine.
Yeah.
Easy, Chewy.
It's got its own trailer. My number is 272.
Swap Shop, Sundays 10 to 11 a.m., right before Liberty Watch.
Electricity, yeah, you can all thank me. Took some lightning, a kite, and a fat brass key. And they're putting up streetlights in Gay Perry. You're welcome for my young nation.
And welcome back to the last segment of Liberty Watch with Philip Williams of the local BBSI group here, and providing all kinds of services to business like workman's comp and keeping people square with with OSHA. And how in the world do you train people to deal with government agencies?
I have no idea. that's an unknowable task.
You're in management, not HR? No, actually, you end up dealing with them on the behalf of some clients. Let me put it this way. Do you think the government we have now comes from the vision of the people whose writings we're reading, or does it come from some other nightmare?
I think it comes from another nightmare.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm repeatedly reminded as I've read through the papers that they relied, the founding fathers relied heavily and blindly in some cases on a few things. One, the freedom of the press. They really did believe that ultimately the freedom of the press was going to be one of the things that would keep things moderated. And I think what we have right now is more like freedom of the propaganda. And then they relied heavily on the idea, they just flatly did not understand why anybody would want to spend their life in politics.
Well, I think they understood why, but they didn't think people would.
Yeah, you have George Washington, who didn't even run for office the second time and somehow got in.
Yeah.
You know, like these guys did not, they saw it as a duty. They did not see it as a way to get wealthy.
As a privilege, right?
Right.
Well, even King George said that if George Washington steps away from power, that he'll be the greatest man who ever lived.
Yeah.
And I think that they recognized that the monarchy was built on years and years of tradition and adhering to the idea of Rex Lex as opposed to Lex Rex, that the king was the divine right of kings as opposed to the rule of law.
Yeah. So I have a pop quiz for you.
Sure. I'll probably flunk.
What document was preceded the Articles of Confederation?
Well, you had the state constitutions.
Oh, there was actually another central document. I'll call it a central document.
Okay.
Signed by the colonies.
Okay.
That caused them to behave as one cohesive unit, and that was the document that created the First Continental Congress.
Okay, and what's that called?
It was called the Continental Association.
The Continental Association. The Continental Association was an agreement to do what? Okay.
Yep. October 20th, 1774.
October 20th,
1774.
Yeah, the Continental Association, also known as the Articles of Association, or simply the Association, was an agreement among American colonies adopted by the First Continental Congress, which met inside Carpenter's Hall. That was the name of it we couldn't think of. In Philadelphia on October 20th, 1774. It was a result of the escalating American Revolution and called for a trade boycott against British merchants or colonies. By the colonies. The Congress hoped that placing economic sanctions on British imports and exports would pressure Parliament into addressing the colonies' grievances, especially repealing the intolerable acts, which were strongly opposed by the colonies. The Congress adopted a non-importation, non-consumption, non-exportation agreement as a peaceful means of settling the colonies' dispute with Great Britain. The agreement, which had been suggested by the Virginia delegate Richard Henry Lee, was based on the 1769 Virginia Association initiated by George Washington and written by George Mason, opened with a pledge of loyalty to King George III of Britain. Well, that's interesting, and went on to outline a series of actions opening with a ban on British imports that would begin December 1, 1774. Trade between the colonies and Britain subsequently fell sharply, but the British soon responded with the New England Restraining Act, which escalated their own economic sanctions. The outbreak of the American Revolutionary War in 1775 superseded the need to boycott British troops. It's like, other than that, Mrs. Lincoln, how was the play?
Right.
So, No, I did not know that. That's discovery on the witness stand, and thank you for teaching me.
Isn't that fun?
Where and when did you learn that?
Here, about 7 minutes ago.
Oh, you mean all the back facts of it, or just searching while you're here on the air?
I knew that there was a document that had existed before, because you know we have this thing that we a lot of times you sit in a high school level history class and you'll hear about the Continental Congress did this and the Continental Congress did that. Well, who the heck gave them the right to do that? How did they, you know, what document caused them to get together? right? And they actually did sign a Continental Association.
Sort of a memorandum of understanding, an IGA, an intergovernmental agreement.
Yeah, it was like, hey, we're going to actually stick together. So you had the Continental Association.
Leading to the Articles of Confederation.
Leading to, well, if you look down, actually, I think it's Declaration of Independence, Continental Association, Articles of Confederation, U.S. Constitution.
Well, this agreement came well before the Declaration of Independence, 2 years before a year and three quarters before the Declaration of Independence. October 20, 1774, almost a full 2 years before the Declaration.
Yeah, I got to put it around backwards
there. Yeah, so let's see. Many Americans saw the coercive acts as a validation of the British Constitution, which is unwritten, and a threat to the liberties of all 13 colonies, not just Massachusetts. What happened to Massachusetts in the intervening years? And they turned to economic boycotts to protest oppressive legislation, which involved the non-importation, exportation, or consumption of British goods.
Well, you know, curiously, Maryland, New York, and Massachusetts were the sort of the three problem children of the colonies. When it came to actually getting unity.
They still are.
Yeah. No.
Closing statement, we're down to the last minute.
Oh, you're going to put me on the hook for one.
Yeah.
Oh, well, that's not fair.
Who said fair?
I saw a Ferris wheel outside. I know there's a fair around here somewhere. Closing statement. I'd like to see a day where we actually recognize the many presidents that served between 1774 and 1789. I think there's not enough emphasis. Again, of course, I'm sitting here as the geek and the lover of history, but just to appreciate how thin our unity and our strength was at that time.
Maybe we could do that and call it, oh, I don't know, President's Day.
No, that's already taken. But maybe we could call it Continental Congress Day, or I don't know.
And when government worked day.
You know, it's funny too. You look at, you know, there was one of our conversations a while back. We talked about how focused they were on budget. And then you start to read 40 and you start to find out, wow, like they were really, really worried about that because we were going bankrupt under the Articles of Confederation. We were really struggling.
Okay, we got to go. AM 1030, KVOI, Cortero, Tucson, The Voice. Stay tuned for America Armed and Free.